هون مجھے متنی نمبر سے آج جناب جناب صلق آیات چکسی سبیلہ چاند دینی تزمائی سیدی لیلہ سی چیتانی امان بیس سام سفیتا مجھے نمتلیس سیم بکدام آیام ندتی سام ندتی کام من تکوبتی بیس شاکی بیس نبی بیس شاکی تنام شبابنی بیس نبی fortunate because by Krishna's arrangement, we'll see the temple class, also the morning class, and the 10th canto. So nice. Why is it nice? Because this is the bhava oshud. This is the medicine. To hear about Krishna is the medicine that cures repeated birth and death. Janma karma chami dibyam. Evam yo veti tatvata. To understand Krishna's position, Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the nature of his birth and activities. This frees one from the cycle of birth and death. Because naturally, if one hears about Krishna, one becomes attracted to him. And when one becomes attracted to Krishna, one becomes detached from the causes of birth and death. What are the causes of birth and death? Having material, selfish, self-centered desires. Because one comes into the material world based on his having turned his back on Krishna. And then one acquires a false ego, a false sense of who he is, something other than being Krishna's servant. And that false sense gets filled with so many desires of how I'm going to enjoy, all based on me, 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 me. And me is identified with the body. And I am my body. Everything I can get my hands on to exploit is mine. The desires, sattvagun, rajagun, tamagun, are in the heart, and then that causes avishaya manas cheyam, avishaya upasevate. They sit in the mind, and they cause the next birth, and then the next birth, and the next birth. But when those desires are removed, gradually or quickly, by having a very great desire in the heart, which is compared to a fire of a different quality, the fire of desiring to serve Krishna, when that is burning within the heart, all the small, petty, ridiculous, selfish, unreasonable material desires become burnt to ashes. They turn into dust, ashes, and then they get blown away by the wind. So let us hear about Krishna. We're on the third chapter of the evening, fifth chapter, and the fifth chapter is very interesting too. Krishna's just about to enter Vrindavan in the fifth chapter, or rather he's entered. But in the sixth chapter, his Vrindavan pastimes and Gokul begin. So fortunate to be hearing about Krishna. So here in the third chapter, we're hearing about the birth of Krishna. How he actually was born. What type of birth is this? Kunti Devi marvels. How could the unborn be born? How could one who is the soul, the individual soul is nityam, nityam, unborn, eternal, shashvatoyam, everlasting, parano, ever-existingly old. How could the Supreme Personality of Godhead take birth? He actually doesn't take birth other than sambhavam yapma mayaya, by his own desire, by his own mercy, by his own internal energy, he comes in a birth far different from the births of the souls, the conditioned souls within material bodies in this world. His birth is by his own desire, by his own internal energy. So let us hear. Thereafter, at the auspicious time for the appearance of the Lord, the entire universe was surcharged with all the qualities of goodness, beauty, and peace. The constellation, the Sanskrit of the constellation is nakshatra. There are different, our Panditji over here can explain it far better than me, but there are 26 different nakshatras. 21. Okay, there are different constellations. Each has a name and a ruler, a demigod who rules it. So the constellation Rohini appeared, which is very, very auspicious, directly under the control of Lord Brahma. So the constellation. So everyone, this is of the moon. There's the moon sign, yes, and then there's the nakshatra of the moon sign. So this influences the auspiciousness or it influences the birth chart of the individual who was born in a particular time. So when Krishna is taking his birth, all auspicious things appear, because all the planets are under the control of Krishna. So is it a perfect constellation, the perfect rasi, lagna, everything is perfect. The rising sign, everything is perfect, because the whole universe arranges itself perfectly for Krishna's appearance, because the Supreme Lord is coming. And the same thing occurred for the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was also the Supreme Lord, was appearing. So goodness, beauty, and peace all became aligned. The atmosphere became surcharged in this way. The constellation Rohini appeared, as did stars like Ashwini. The sun, the moon, and the other stars and planets were very peaceful. All directions appeared extremely pleasing, and the beautiful stars twinkled in the cloudless sky. Decorated with towns, villages, mines, and pasturing grounds, the earth seemed all auspicious. Sometimes we see this even during every day. Suddenly the mood will shift in an individual, and you suddenly feel very peaceful and happy. And then at other times, depression may overcome us. These are all the different influences of the modes of material nature. But when the planets are just right, and everything is auspicious, then everyone feels the auspiciousness of the present moment. I remember one time I was in the Philippines, and suddenly I was sitting in a room with like 10 people. Suddenly there was a feeling. The whole atmosphere dropped. It was, but you know, usually it's the thing that no one mentions or talks about. But then one of the devotees I was sitting with said, "Did you feel that?" And everyone then said, "Yes." Usually you just think, "Oh, it's me." But actually there are so many effects that affect us, that are so far beyond our control. So here there was a great auspiciousness that was enveloping the world, because Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was inventing. So fortunate. He's all attractive. The earth was going to be so fortunate, made fortunate, because Krishna's lotus feet were going to touch the earth and remove all the miseries that the earth was feeling. And the earth had prayed specifically for Krishna's advent. She had taken the form of a cow, because Krishna is so fond of cows, mother cow, just to evoke Krishna's sympathy that Bhumi Devi, the earth, was feeling some anxiety, so Krishna now was coming. So decorated with towns, villages, mines, and pasturing ground, the earth seemed all auspicious. The rivers flowed with clear water, and the lakes and vast reservoirs full of lilies and lotuses were extraordinarily beautiful. And the trees and green plants full of flowers and leaves pleasing to the eyes. Birds like cuckoos and swarms of bees began chanting with sweet voices for the sake of the demigods. A pure breeze began to flow. So everything was perfectly adjusted for Krishna's birth. And when the Brahmins the breezes began to blow, pleasing the senses of touch and bearing the very fragrant aroma of the flowers that were blooming in the trees, the breezes very cooling because the season was very, very, it was hot, a hot season. And the breeze is so much appreciated during those seasons. So pleasing the sense of touch and bearing the aroma of flowers. And when the brahmanas, engaging in ritualistic ceremonies, ignited their fires according to Vedic principles, the fires burned steadily, undisturbed by the breeze. Thus, when the birthless Lord Vishnu, was about to take his birth, When the birthless Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was about to appear, the saints and brahmanas, who had always been disturbed by demons like Kamsa and his men, felt peace within the core of their hearts and kettle drums vibrated from the upper planetary systems. Why? Because Krishna, because the demigods were aware that in the previous chapter they expressed their awareness in wonderful prayers that spoke of the Lord as they knew him from the position of the demigods. Later on we'll hear how not the demigods appreciate this personality known as Krishna, but how the residents of Vrindavan appreciate that personality. But the demigods knew that the Lord was going to advent himself for approximately 125 years on the earth. And then when that 125 years was over, the demigods, including Lord Brahma, will come to Dwarka and say, Krishna, they will pray very humbly to him and say, Krishna, your mission is completed. Now it's time for you to go. And they will all wait at the departure time for Krishna in the sky, waiting for Krishna to come and to invite him to come to their own planet on the way as he passes onward from this universe. But in any case, part of the auspiciousness was that the Brahmins felt very peaceful in their hearts. And the fires, they were always in anxiety because of Kamsa's. Kamsa was giving so much trouble to everyone. He had stopped the performance of Vedic sacrifices, like King Vena had stopped the performance of Vedic sacrifices, saying there is no need to worship anyone because the king is the sum total of all the demigods. He is Naradeva, he is the representative of the Supreme Lord, therefore the only person you should worship is the king, who happens to be me. In other words, he was a demon. So Kamsa similarly was a demon trying to kill Krishna. But yet at this particular time there was such auspiciousness, the hearts of the Brahmins became peaceful, despite the atrocious behavior of Kamsa, and the fires which they were lighting were burning very steadily, despite the sweet breezes. Prabhupada's purport. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that his appearance, birth, and activities are all transcendental. And that one who factually understands them, what is the verse Prabhupada is quoting or paraphrasing? What is the verse? Keep going. Takvadeham punar janma naiti. Puna janma naiti. No more births to someone who understands. Becomes eligible to be transferred to the spiritual world. The Lord's appearance or birth is not like that of an ordinary man who is forced to accept a material body according to his past deeds. The Lord's appearance, as explained in the previous chapter, he appears out of his own sweet pleasure. Even though it's scheduled, he appears on schedule, he is not forced to adhere to that schedule. He comes down because of his own sweet will. Sambhavam yapma mayaya. Because he wants to. When the time was mature for the appearance of the Lord, the constellations became very auspicious. The astrological influence of the constellation known as Rohini was also predominant, because this constellation is considered very auspicious. Rohini is under the direct supervision of each of the constellations. Each of the nakshatras have a demigod who influences it, and this one is the topmost. Brahma means great, greatest. Brahma, who is born of Vishnu, and it appears at the birth of Lord Vishnu, who in fact is birthless. According to the astrological conclusion, beside the proper situation of the stars, there are auspicious and inauspicious moments due to the different situation of the different planetary systems. The different planets, of course, are in different positions. Continuously, they're changing, and sometimes they're in auspicious positions and have auspicious conjunctions with each other, and sometimes inauspicious. Sometimes they are near enemies, sometimes they are near friends. So at the time of Krishna's birth, the planetary systems were automatically adjusted so that everything became auspicious. At that time, in all directions, east, west, south, north, everywhere, there was an auspicious atmosphere of peace and prosperity. Auspicious stars were visible in the sky, and on the surface, in all the towns and villages or pasturing grounds, and within the mind of everyone, there were signs of good fortune. What are the signs of good fortune? The rivers were flowing, full of water. Not they were drying up and polluted. The lakes were beautifully decorated with lotus flowers. The forests were filled with beautiful birds and peacocks. All the birds within the forest began to sing with sweet voices. When this is occurring, everyone's mind becomes filled with peace and happiness in a pleasant, auspicious atmosphere. The mode of goodness here is serving the Lord. And of course, everything is transcendental. But all the birds within the forest began to sing with sweet voices, and the peacocks began to dance with their consorts, the peahens. The wind blew very pleasantly, carrying the aroma of different flowers, different fragrant flowers, at different seasons, different flowers, fragrant flowers blossom, and the ones that blossom around Krishna's time are very, very, birth time is very, very fragrant. Very, very sweet, sweet flowers with their beautiful fragrances. Who knows some of the flowers that blossom around this time in the our calendar, August. What's the month? In the...
That was September.
Yes, but in the... Is it Bhadra? No, it's... Is it?
Yeah.
In the Astami. What paksha? What paksha?
Krishna paksha. Dark.
That means the dark. That means when the it is waning, the moon is waning. So what flowers blossom at that time? Does anyone know any of them?
Lotus.
But very sweet, the bale fruit.
Malati.
Bakul. Oh, all these flowers are so fragrant. And in Vrindavan, at those times, sometimes you're just walking along and a breeze comes, even now, and it carries to your nostrils the fragrance of these flowers. They're so sweet. And oh, just you feel so happy to smell them. This is Krishna's flower remedies. The wind was blowing, carrying the aroma of these different flowers, and the sensation of bodily touch was very pleasing, being touched by the soothing, cooling breezes of the wind. At home, the brahmanas, who were accustomed to offer sacrifices in the fire, found their homes very pleasing for offerings. Because of the disturbances created by the demoniac kings, such as Kamsa, the sacrificial fire had been almost stopped in the houses of the Brahmins, but now they could find the opportunity to start the fire peacefully. When these homas or sacrificial fires are burning, being fed by ghee, that makes the atmosphere also very auspicious. One perceives this anytime there's a sacrificial fire, the atmosphere becomes very auspicious. Surcharged with auspiciousness and goodness. What to speak of when the holy names of the Lord are chanted, all auspiciousness comes about. So now the Brahmins, who the inauspiciousness was removed, the inauspiciousness of Kamsa's influence was removed, but now the Brahmins could find the opportunity to start the fires peacefully. Being forbidden to offer sacrifices by demonic King Kamsa, the Brahmins were very distressed in mind, intelligence, and activities. But just on the point of Krishna's appearance, automatically their minds became full of joy because they could hear the loud vibrations in the sky of transcendental sounds proclaiming the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So wonderful, wonderful. On the occasion of Lord Krishna's birth, seasonal changes took place throughout the entire universe. Krishna was born during the month of September, yet it appeared like springtime. The atmosphere, however, was very cool because usually it's very hot during the month of September in Vrindavan. And also Mathura. And although not chilly, it was cool. It was warm and cool. The cool breezes, very just perfect. And the rivers and reservoirs appeared just as they would in the Sharat season, the fall, which is the ideal season after the rainy season. Everything is full and clear. Lotuses and lilies blossomed during the day. But although Krishna appeared at 12 o'clock midnight, the lilies and lotuses were in bloom, and thus the wind blowing at that time was full of fragrance. Because of Kamsa's disturbances, the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies had almost stopped. The Brahmins and saintly persons could not execute the Vedic rituals with peaceful mind. But now the Brahmins were very pleased to perform their daily ritualistic ceremonies undisturbed. The business of the Asuras is to disturb the Suras, the devotees and Brahmins. But at the time of Krishna's appearance, these devotees and Brahmins were undisturbed. The Kinaras, the Gandharvas, began to sing auspicious songs. Auspicious sound vibrations were present because these Upadevatas were singing. These not quite demigods, but very close to it. They were singing. And just because every sound vibration has, it affects the consciousness. So when there are auspicious sound vibrations that are very highly surcharged with goodness. It elevates the consciousness. And when there are demonic sound vibrations coming out of loudspeakers with electric guitars and etc., 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 and the mood of the music being demonic. On Sunday, I was mentioning that at the Woodstock Festival many years ago, I was present, and there were people playing their electric guitars and saying, "You are moving the sun, and it is you who's moving the moon." Boom, 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 boom. "You are moving the sun and the moon." Such demonic, dark vibrations come from that. And on the other hand, when there's sweet, the sweet sounds of with non-demonic instruments with played by expert musicians and sweet singing, the atmosphere becomes surcharged with auspiciousness. So the Kinaras and Gandharvas began to sing auspicious songs. The Siddhas and Charanas offered auspicious prayers. Just like some during different ceremonies, we hear the Purusha Shukta being vibrated, and the atmosphere becomes surcharged, auspicious. And when the homa, the fire sacrifice, going on, the ghee is being offered, sesame seeds are being offered into fire, mantras are chanted, everything becomes so auspicious. This is the gift of the Vedic culture, how to make human life and the world auspicious. And at the most auspicious times, Krishna can come. And the Vidyadharas, along with the Apsaras, began to dance in jubilation. This is more description of the auspicious atmosphere. The demigods and great saintly persons showered newspapers that were ripped up from the sky. What did they shower from the sky? And then the next day, when they're New York, they do that on the greatest of occasions. The people go up, they parade someone down Fifth Avenue, and they throw paper. And then the next day, all the garbage people have to pick everything up. Compare that to the shower of flowers, auspicious flowers, fragrant, light, tender, delicate flowers coming down. In a joyous mood, and the clouds gathered in the sky and very mildly thundered, making sounds like those of the ocean waves. Nice, yo. Then the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who is situated in the core of everyone's heart, appeared from the heart of Devaki in the dense darkness of night, like the full moon rising on the eastern horizon. What horizon does the sun set? Everyone knows that one? The west. And on the full moon day, just as the sun is setting, the moon on exactly opposite is arising. So on the eastern, when the sun has set, the moon arises, the full moon arises on the eastern horizon, because Devaki she was of the same category as Sri Krishna. She was pure because the supreme pure was in her. So one can naturally say, how is it possible? Because Krishna, we say Janmastami, Janma Astami. His birth is on the Astami, the eighth day of the Krishna Paksha, of the dark moon night. But how could the full moon be rising on the eighth day of the moon, when it is just beginning, it is waxing, it is getting brighter? How could the full moon be rising? So Prabhupada will explain that in the purport. We'll read a section of this purport. We read the whole of the other, describing the auspiciousness. But here, at the time for the Lord's appearance, the great sages and the demigods, being pleased, began to shower flowers. At the seashore, there was the sound of mild waves, and above the sea, there were clouds in the sky which began to thunder very pleasingly. But things were adjusted like this. Lord Vishnu, who is residing within the heart of every living entity, appeared in the darkness of night as the Supreme Personality of Godhead before Devaki, who appeared as one of the demigoddesses. The appearance of Lord Vishnu at that time could be compared to the rising of the full moon in the sky on the eastern horizon. The objection may be raised that since Lord Krishna appeared on the eighth day of the waning moon, there could be no rising of the full moon. In answer to this, it may be said that Lord Krishna appeared in the dynasty, which is the higher in the hierarchy of the moon, the Soma dynasty, and therefore, although the moon was incomplete on that night because of the Lord's appearance in the dynasty where the moon is himself the original person, the moon was in an overjoyous condition. So by the grace of Krishna, he could appear as a full moon. To welcome the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the waning moon became full in jubilation. Jubilation means great, great happiness, more than happiness, jubilation. Such extreme happiness the moon was experiencing. Vasudev was there with Devaki. Vasudev then saw the newborn child who had very wonderful lotus-like eyes, because this boy is so beautiful. He is so beautiful. Vasudev saw this beautiful boy who had wonderful lotus-like eyes, and he had four hands, quite extraordinary and uncommon. So he had lotus-like eyes, and this is just after his birth, because Krishna is taking this form for many reasons. One is to assure his parents that he is not ordinary, that he is extraordinary, that he is Vishnu. So he bore in his hands, the four weapons, Sank, Chakra, Gada, and Padma. On his chest was the mark of Srivats, and on his neck the brilliant Kostuba gem, who represents all the living entities upon the chest of the Lord. Srivats, the goddess of fortune, the mark of the goddess of fortune. Dressed in yellow, this is just at his birth, his body blackish like a dense cloud. This year, I was in Vrindavan during a very powerful rainy season, and there was one special day that I remembered where the sun was shining from behind a sky that was full of monsoon clouds. So the sky was simultaneously effulgent and blackish at the same time. It was incredible. And I thought, this gives a glimpse to this fallen soul of what Krishna's complexion is like. Effulgent and this beautiful blackish color. Shama. Gana Shama. Yes, and also Mega Sham, same. So incredibly, it was actually incredible, shockingly incredible, effulgent and blackish with the sun pouring through. His scattered hair was fully grown. So this is just coming out of the womb. And his helmet and earrings sparkling uncommonly with a valuable gem, Vaidurja. The child decorated with a brilliant belt, armlet, bangles, and other ornaments appeared very wonderful. Not exactly coming out of the womb, but just after his so-called birth. Extraordinary, clearly. To support the word adbhutam from the verse. What is tam adbhutam balakam ambu jekshanam? So what does Adbhutam mean?
Wonderful.
What song do we sing every day? Adbhuta Shringam. Very wonderful. So what? We use that word. Oh, everything is wonderful. How are you today? Wonderful. Oh, that's a wonderful watch you have over there. This is wonderful. But what does wonderful mean? Even the English word means when you see it, you become full of wonder. How is this? This is so wonderful. I'm wondering, how is this possible? So, adbhuta, wonderful, astonishment. Really, in the word wonderful, adbhuta, there is astonishing, astonishment. So, adbhuta balakam, this child, this balak, was wonderful, astonishing. He was so, we just heard what he was so. He was so full of these extraordinary characteristics. So Vasudev then saw the newborn child who had very wonderful lotus-like eyes. Prabhupada's purport. To support the word adbhutam, meaning wonderful, the decorations and opulence of the newborn child are fully described. So this was what was astonishingly wonderful about him. As confirmed in the Brahma Samhita, Bahavatapsam asitam buddhasundarangam. The hue, the color of the Lord's beautiful form resembled the blackish color of dense clouds. Asitam means blackish and ambuddha means cloud. It is clear from the word chaturbhujam that Krishna first appeared with four hands as Lord Vishnu. No ordinary child in human society has ever been born as chaturbhuj, with four arms. And when a child is born, and when is a child born with fully grown hair? The descent of the Lord, therefore, is completely distinct from the birth of an ordinary child. The Vaidurya gem, which sometimes appears black, bluish, sometimes yellow, and sometimes red, is available in Vaikuntha Loka. The Lord's helmet and earrings were decorated with this particular gem. So when Vasudev saw his extraordinary son, his eyes were struck with wonder. In transcendental jubilation, he mentally collected 10,000 cows and distributed them amongst the Brahmins as a transcendental festival. Why didn't he distribute real cows? He was so wealthy. Why did he only mentally do this?
He
was in the prison. Kamsa had thrown him in there. So he could only do it mentally, but he did do it mentally. And when one does some devotional service mentally, then it has tangible, real results. This is one of the great compensations of Kali Yuga. That in Kali Yuga, every bad thing that we do mentally, there is no karma for. Just imagine if we got karma for all the bad things. If I got karma for all the bad things mentally. Oh, nothing. But the good things mentally done, good karma comes from that. It's as if one had done it. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Prabhupada's purport, has analyzed the wonder of Vasudev upon seeing his extraordinary child. Vasudev was shivering in ecstasy with wonder upon seeing his extraordinary child, his son, Vishnu. Vasudev was shivering with wonder to see a newborn child decorated so nicely with valuable garments and gems. He could immediately understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead had appeared, not as an ordinary child, but as his original, fully decorated, four-handed form. The first wonder was that the Lord was not afraid to appear within the prison house of Kamsa, where Vasudeva and Devaki were interned. Second wonder, although the Lord, the Supreme Transcendence, is all-pervading, He had appeared from the womb of Devaki. The third point of wonder, therefore, was that a child could take birth from the womb so nicely dressed. Fourth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead was Vasudev, who was Vasudev's worshipable deity, yet he had taken his birth as his son. For all these reasons, Vasudev was transcendentally jubilant, and he wanted to perform a festival, as Kshatriyas do, to celebrate the birth of a child. But because of his imprisonment, he was unable to do it externally, and therefore he performed the festival within his mind. This was just as good. There is nothing that can stop or check one's devotional service. One can even perform devotional service in one's mind if there is no other opportunity to perform devotional service. If one cannot externally serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can serve the Lord within one's mind, since the activities of the mind are as good as those as the other senses. This is called the non-dual or absolute situation, Advaita Gyan. People generally perform ritualistic ceremonies for the birth of a child. Why then should Vasudev not have performed such a ceremony when the Supreme Lord appeared as his son? O Maharaj Prickett, who is speaking? Sukadev Goswami, descendant of King Bharata, Vasudev could understand that this child was the Supreme Personality of Godhead Narayan. Having concluded this without a doubt, he became fearless. What was he fearful of? Kamsa. But with Vishnu there as his son, no more fear. He was surely fearless, since he can understand that the Lord had appeared to give him protection. Gatta bi pranava vit. Understanding that the Supreme Personality of Godhead was present, he appropriately offered prayers as follows. So in the next text, 10 texts from 13 to 22, Vasudeva will offer prayers. And today, if Krishna allows, we will just hear two of those prayers, the first two. Vasudeva said, and this is the first thing he's going to say to his newborn child, you are the Supreme Person beyond material existence, and you are the Supersoul. Your form can be perceived by transcendental knowledge, by which you can be understood as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I now understand your position perfectly. Purport. So first point in the prayers that you, because we've been hearing the first nine cantos before this and building up our understanding of who this Supreme Person is, because now we've seen him in his Varaha incarnation. What other incarnations have we heard about in the Bhagavatam? Ramana Dev. Incredible things Varaha Dev, Ramana Dev did. Who else? Mishringa Dev. Regardless, and who else? Matsya. Who else? Shri Ram. Yes. In the ninth canto we heard about Ram. It's getting closer to understanding that even when the Lord comes, even if he comes in a human form, he's still the Lord. So just to prove to us, practically speaking, that this child is the Lord, because he's going to do the most amazing things. More amazing than Varaha's, Matsya's, Sri Ram's activities. More amazing than Parsaram. More amazing than Buddha. More amazing than Kapila Dev. We will hear about these. He's going to have the most intimate exchanges with his devotees. But yet, he is still the Supreme Personality of Godhead, despite his two-armed beautiful form playing the flute. So the first thing Vasudev says, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the Lord made it easier for him. He proved it by being in a four-armed form and coming in this wonderful way. So, within Vasudev's heart, Affection for his son and knowledge of the Supreme Lord's transcendental nature both awakened. What awakened? One thing? Affection for his son. Second thing? Knowledge. Yes. Both awakened. In the beginning, Vasudeva thought, such a beautiful child has been born, but now Kamsa will come and kill him. But when the transcendental knowledge was awakened within his heart, he thought, he understood this was not an ordinary child, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He became Abhay. Abhaya means fear. Abhay, fearless. Regarding his son as the Supreme Lord, wonderful in everything, he began offering prayers appropriate for the Supreme Lord, completely free from fear of conscious atrocities. He accepted the child simultaneously as an object of affection and as an object of worship by prayers. Second prayer. He is the Supreme Lord. He is in the material world. But is he in the material world? No. He's aloof from the material world. And now Vasudeva is going to say that. And this will be the final prayer that we'll read today. My Lord, you are the same person who in the beginning created this material world by his personal external energy. What cantos did we hear about the Lord's creation of the material world? 2 and 3. And now that he's done all that, but yet here he is. You created this by your personal external energy after the creation of this world, the three gunas, sattva, rajas, and you appear to have entered it, although in fact you have not. Krishna, we use the word as His Holiness Bhanuswami explained on Mahaprabhu's, Gauranga Mahaprabhu's appearance day, explained that the word avatar, we translate it means as he who descends, one who descends, but actually he doesn't descend into the material world. He is never in the material world. He is never of the material world. He allows us to see him, and we call that descent, his descent, his avatar. He allows those of the material world access, some access. But he never comes to the material world. He's never touching the material world. He's never affected by the material world. He's always transcendental, always situated in his spiritual energy. We'll read from some of Prabhupada's purport here, because it's quite a long purport, one short paragraph. Foolish persons think that when Krishna appears as the son of Vasudeva, he is limited like an ordinary child. But Vasudeva was aware that although the Lord had appeared as his son, the Lord had not entered Devaki's womb and then come out. Rather, the Lord was always there. The Supreme Lord is all-pervading, present within and without. Pravishta eva bhavyase. He only seemed to have entered the womb of Devaki and to have now appeared as Vasudeva's child. The expression of this knowledge by Vasudeva indicates that Vasudeva knew how these events took place. Vasudeva was certainly a devotee of the Lord in full knowledge, and we must learn from devotees like him. So we are hearing about Krishna. So we're getting some more, in case we haven't understood it after reading all the 9 cantos, and in case we haven't understood it after hearing the prayers of the demigods from the previous chapter, who will say something quite similar, who had said something quite similar. Now we're hearing again, this Krishna, he is not of the material world, he is all pervading, nothing is different from him, so he's already there in Devaki's womb. So there's no question of him having to be placed there, he's already there. Okay, we'll stop here. Tomorrow, Krishna willing, we shall continue. Preparing us to see the most intimate pastimes of Krishna and not misunderstand them. Once, when I was in Bangladesh, this Christian fellow, he came over to me and said, how could you worship this Krishna? Typical. He's dancing with the wives of others, how could your God dances with the other, he's such a licentious person. So they know something. A little knowledge is a dangerous thing. So knew something that Krishna dances with the gopis, but not really understanding at all, having the slightest hint who Krishna is or what he does. So we should, before hearing the 10th canto, one has to be prepared with all this knowledge. Questions, comments? Prabhu,
Bolia. We mostly heard that when Krishna was in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he was 125. And after that, he went back to Dharaga. So they never explained that how long he was in Dharaga.
Yes, maybe I have the calculation, perhaps 30, 35 years. More after.
So about 160,
180. So old, too old. I think the total Leela was 125, but I've also heard it said sometimes that he was 90 in Kurukshetra, but I've also heard sometimes 125. But I think his total Leela on this earth was 125 years. It's in the 11th canto. It's described. Yeah. But 90 is also old, for especially to look like a young boy.
So the entire canto explaining that, when Vidura, when he met Uddhava, and they were discussing,
yeah,
that Srila Prabhupada explained that appearance and disappearance, although devotees then want to talk so much about disappearance, about appearance. So in this case, when Krishna, he appears, but at the same time, in Srimad Bhagavatam says he never left Gaura Vrindavan.
Aprakat Leela.
So how we can understand
Vrindavanam Prityaja Palam Ekam Nagacchati. He never leaves not even one Padam Ekam Nagacchati.
So
not even one step out of Vrindavan.
So that's
Aprakrit. Aprakrit Vrindavan. That's the spiritual realm where the Leela is going on eternally. And this was Krishna's instructions to the gopis through Uddhava and to the gopis directly in Kurukshetra too. That through your separation, you can experience me in the Aprakrit.
So when this happened, when Krishna take all Jyotir dynasty everyone, and Uddhava, he didn't take Uddhava, and he was asking, can he take me?
Yeah.
So why he didn't take him?
Because he had some seva for him to do. He also didn't take others. Brajanab, he didn't take others also, because he had something for him to do. Do you know what he wanted him to do?
Of course, he went to Badrinath.
Yeah, he wanted. There were some things that he wanted the sages there to hear about Krishna's pastimes and the Uddhava Gita that they didn't know. So he had a mission. Krishna had a long list of things he wanted to accomplish in his Leela, and some he couldn't get done. They were not yet checked. So he gave those some to Uddhava to do. Krishna's Leela is wonderful. Even Krishna's disappearance is wonderful. But devotees prefer to hear about his appearance because they don't like to think of Krishna leaving this world. They don't like to think of Krishna leaving Vrindavan. Even Kavi Kanapur, he stopped his Ananda Vrindavan Champu when he didn't describe Krishna's leaving Vrindavan. He didn't want to describe it even.
In Guruvinda Devi Worship book, there's a slogan from the 10th canto saying that Krishna is the leader of the Yadu dynasty, and with his mighty arms he kills everything inauspicious and kills every man who's impious, and by his presence he destroys everything inauspicious for all living beings, moving and non-moving. And then I like the idea of trying to recite something, so I try to remember that. And then I was reading to the 10th canon.
Okay, that's how you say it.
The Sanskrit.
Yeah. How nice. If not today, tomorrow. Okay. I might want to practice a little.
Yeah. I always, the first word I get mixed up with another one.
Okay.
So, but then I was reading, and actually in Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that the reason why Shri Vyasadeva spoke this sloka is because to pacify the devotees who are not present as the devotees were 5,000 years ago. They're present after, and so they're feeling separation. So Vyasadeva's saying that, don't worry, but by hearing a chanting about him, he'll be present and he'll destroy all the auspiciousness. So
therefore, what's the conclusion?
We have to hear a chanting about Krishna.
And then all the inauspiciousness comes destroyed. I heard Prabhupada say that on a lecture that I heard just this morning. We have to keep in the Krishna sun. He said by chanting always Hare Krishna. Krishna Surya Sam Maya.
Why sometimes Prabhupada explained that those demons might like a Kamsa Ahira because one others, you know, and Metafield of Kurisha trying to so many those they are against origin groups. So why Prabhupada says they are much greater than devotees. Sometimes probably with the sentence much greater. And sometimes it says, for Krishna, he much more also to the devotees, special protection and different things. But why they use the words with much greater than devotees?
And the demons are greater than the devotees? Maybe you have to show me the reference.
Okay.
The only thing that I could think of is when on the battle of Kurukshetra, those who are opposing Krishna are sometimes said to be more fortunate than Arjuna. Those who are fighting with Krishna can be said to be more fortunate than Arjuna, because Arjuna is behind Krishna. Krishna is driving the chariot and he can't see Krishna's face, beautiful face. But those who are fighting Krishna, they can see his beautiful face. But usually we don't say that the demons are more fortunate. We shouldn't be demons.
No, we shouldn't be.
Usually he says that the demons, because the demons, where do they attain? They attain the same goal as the impersonalists. And Prabhupada doesn't criticize anyone more than he criticizes the impersonalists. So,
that's the answer Prabhupada giving in the next thing. That sometimes I say they're more fortunate, but they say they get liberation to Brahma Jati. But they say because they see face to face, although they see they as enemy, but they see face to face and the fighting, and they get sometimes touched by Krishna. So face to face, Uddhava is explaining to Vidura that.
So that's true rasa, from the point of view of rasa, but not from the point of view of tattva. From the point of view of rasa, oh, how fortunate it is to see the beautiful face of Krishna. So there's a way of explaining how beautiful Krishna's face is, but from the tattva point of view, certainly the demons are not, it's not an admirable position. But yes, a nice point though. But we should stop now. But tomorrow, Krishna willing, you can save questions. Okay? Thank you very much. Shrimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Bhaktivinoda ki jai.